Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On June 19, 1865, Union troops came to Galveston Bay, Texas, and proclaimed that slavery was over. More than 2 years had passed since the Emancipation Proclamation declared that enslaved people in Confederate-controlled areas were free, but Union forces struggled to enforce the proclamation in isolated Confederate strongholds like Texas. Tomorrow's holiday, Juneteenth, commemorates that day that some 250,000 Black people across the state of Texas were finally free. On the first Juneteenth celebration held in 1866 in Galveston, Black leaders shared information about their newly acquired rights. On today's Your Call, we will discuss how that legacy inspires today's activists as the Trump regime works to eviscerate the civil rights movement, cancels crucial programs that disproportionately benefit Black people and people of color, and whitewashes the true history of this country. Later in the show, we will speak with organizers of Juneteenth celebrations. We begin with Professor John Powell, a renowned scholar and advocate in the areas of civil rights, structural racism, housing, constitutional law, equality, democracy, and belonging. Professor Powell is director of the Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley, where he holds the Robert D. Haas Chancellor's Chair in Equity and Inclusion. He's also professor of law, ethnic studies, and African American studies. Professor John Powell is author and co-author of a number of books, including Belonging Without Othering, How We Save Ourselves and the World, The Power of Bridging and Racing to Justice. Professor Powell joins us from Berlin, where he is a fellow at the Robert Bosch Academy. Hi, Professor Powell. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Oh, it's nice to be here, Rose. And how are things in the Bay Area?
Hanging in there. I mean, it's such a, what's the word for it? It's a, such an intense time because on the one hand, and I talk about this on our US at 250, a Native Perspective series, there are so many amazing books coming out, documentaries, new museums about, you know, Black power, about Black resistance. And at the same time, look at what is happening with Trump, canceling crucial programs that disproportionately empower Black people, taking slave exhibits down from national parks and museums. And I wonder, Professor Powell, you are amazing because right now you're in Europe talking to people about what is happening in this country. Can you tell us a bit about that, about this fellowship that you have right now at the Robert Bosch Academy?
Yes, it's a very nice fellowship. And they basically give the fellows, and I think there are ten of us in this particular class, but they pick fellows to sort of do whatever you want to do for anywhere from 3 months to a year, year and a half. You can publish or write something, but you don't have to. And they also provide some resources. And this focus on Europe, with also some focus on Germany, but not exclusively. So what I'm trying to look at is what are the dynamics in Europe around authoritarianism, race and othering, as well as trying to promote and expand democratic inclusion and resiliency.
What has been your experience talking with Europeans about what is happening in this country? What stands out for you about their response?
Well, one thing is, I've been to Spain now, and I just got back from Ireland. And in fact, I was in Belfast, Northern Ireland, when the riots broke out there. And I talked to a number of people about the riots. It's very troubling. People were burned out of their homes. Cars were burned up. Roads were stopped. People were attacked. And there's a narrative about why this is, what's going on. But as you know, Northern Ireland was where the famous troubles took place, fights between Protestants, Catholic, also religious tensions. And that was the frame people used to try to make sense of what was happening now. And while it's certainly relevant, I don't think it's adequate. But I don't pretend to understand their situation either. I mean, I've only been there a few days.
Right.
But one of the things that's interesting is that the immigrants who were attacked, there's an incident where an immigrant attacked an Irish man and hospitalized him and maybe blinded him in one eye. And then people started attacking immigrants. The incident happened in a Catholic neighborhood. Most of the protesters were Protestant. And for people who don't know Northern Irish history, the political and power minority in Northern Ireland has been the Catholics. So it wasn't the most vulnerable group in a sense. It was the group who actually holds power. In fact, most of the people, many of the people who actually came forward to protect the immigrants were Catholic. So it happened in a Catholic neighborhood. The Catholics are worse off in many ways. The gap between Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland is similar to the gap between whites and blacks in the United States. So the first couple of days was talked about in terms of immigration, with some reference to Catholics and Protestants. But then it switched to being talked about race, because I think the majority of immigrants in Ireland are white. The attacks were almost exclusively on black and brown immigrants. So people were targeting people from Africa. And that sort of, I think, repeats itself. There's a talk about immigration, which is complex and maybe real in some sense. But the overlay is also issues around race and color and stuff like that. One thing I will say is they have the infrastructure to address this problem, because what they went through 30 years ago. And while they're prodding the government to do more, they still have a government that's somewhat responsive. In the United States, basically, ethnic nationalists and white supremacists captured the government, and not just the White House, but the Senate and the House and the media. So the infrastructure here is much worse. And part of that is not just racialized. As you know, Trump is threatening to blow up, not literally, but figuratively, NATO. So people in Europe are trying to make sense of what's going on. The hallmark of apparent democracy and inclusion with all these problems for many years was the United States. Now the United States is leading the right-wing insurgency across the world.
I wonder, Professor Pell, you've been at this for quite a long time. The work that you do with the Othering and Belonging Institute is so powerful. I think it's so important for all of us to really sit with that word othering, and then, of course, belonging. And I wonder how you are seeing this moment, because there are the big things that are happening, but when you drill down, I mean, this administration is taking a fine-tooth comb to so many programs that disproportionately affect Black people. For years, we have done shows about the septic tank crisis in rural Alabama. And it's so hard to keep up with everything. But thanks to Derek Jackson at the American Prospect for writing a piece about how the administration canceled an effort by the Biden administration to provide septic tanks to residents in the Black Belt of Alabama. As you know, this is one of the poorest parts of the country, and people have been fighting for decades to get basic septic tanks so they don't have to walk around in waste in their front yard. He's getting rid of this program. And that's just one of so many that disproportionately would benefit Black people. So there's so many layers to all of this. How are you thinking about this moment, given that it is hard to keep up with what this administration is doing?
And that's somewhat deliberate. I mean, part of their strategy was to overpower people. They talked about a fire hose, just not just executive quarters, but attacking on many levels. And part of that is actually Trump assembling a team after his first stint in the White House, which frankly didn't get much done. A lot of bluster, a lot of negative statements, but not a lot of substance. And this time, with Project 2020, 28, and they came with a playbook and they came with a team. They assembled a team before the election, and they hit the ground running. You think about Elon Musk and the Dodge thing. I mean, the idea was to really not just change policy, but to change institutions. And one thing that's important to understand, a lot of people say, well, we've been through this before. That's largely not true, where we have the government itself in an assertive way, not just being against civil rights, but defining people as the other. And the list is long. I mean, in a sense, a very few people make the list of being a belonging. So if you're gay, you don't belong. If you're Native American, you don't belong. If you're, liberal, you don't belong. If you speak up against the president, you don't belong. If you're a moderate Republican, you don't belong. And so, and it's interesting, part of the rhetoric they use, and obviously the country has a lot of issues to deal with everywhere, but part of the rhetoric they use is that these immigrants or these others are threatening the fabric of America. And it's just the opposite. I mean, we're going to celebrate our 250th year, and you look at the United States struggling with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitutions and the Civil War. There was a thread in that, and the thread was fighting over what we mean by equality, fighting over who gets to participate in democracy, fighting over being a United States. We used to say the United States are, because each state was so separate. And over time, we started pulling stuff together, as President Obama talks about a more perfect union. And what this administration is doing, it's not just attacking black people, it's attacking the very foundation of a liberal democracy. It's attacking the core values that were at one point the pride of America. They're the opposite of patriots. They're revolutionaries, and they're not conservative. So it's not, in the past, we've argued between conservatives and liberals. They're neither. They are fundamental white ethnic supremacists. And so you have Elon Musk trolling, talking about going around the world, stirring up hatred and talking about white genocide. When the thing happened in Northern Ireland in Belfast, within a day, Elon Musk was posting, encouraging people to riot. And so the other thing is it's global, and it's part of a global network, and they have machinery. As you know, Elon Musk became the world's first trillionaire. So you have resources that are being brought to bear that was never there before. You have social media, and it has people on the heels. And I think it's, but I think there's a good news as well. We just looked at a study, for example, that in 2024, what's called the far left and the far right was about equal in number. 2026, only 2 years later, the far right has shrunk in size. According to the study, it's gone from almost 10% to about 2%. Now, you wouldn't know that from all the stuff that's being put out because they're controlling power. They're controlling the airwaves. But Trump's not popular right now with most Americans. And there's a whole group, I work with a group called Leaving MAGA, where people wanting to leave, wanting to find something different. What we haven't done is being very clear and coherent of what that is. We can't go back to where we were. We have to move forward. And what does moving forward look like? And what it looks like, I think, thanks for the plug, belonging without othering. Saying that everybody belongs. This is not just a civil rights movement. This is not just a LGBTQ movement. This is not just an environment. This is really for everybody. We have to say it. We have to mean it. We have to adopt programs. We have to be willing to listen to people. and really move forward. So I think there's glimmers of hope out there, but they only will materialize if we really dig in and make them work.
I love the motto of the Othering and Belonging Institute. Othering is the problem of our time. Belonging is the solution. And Professor Powell, since you talked about what it will take to move forward, I hate to bring this into a show about Juneteenth, but we have to because this is where we are. I wonder what your thoughts are about what Trump's level of overt racism is doing to our society, and how do we move forward from this? I was just reading about how he's been like this for decades, but it's just gotten worse. You can go back to the racist ad that he took out in the New York Times in 1989 about the Central Park Five. And then before he ran for president, his conspiracy theories about President Obama being born in Kenya, not Hawaii, when he launched his campaign calling Mexicans racist. And then the post, and I hate to bring this up, but this is what we're dealing with, his post depicting the Obamas as apes. And I was looking up information about what has happened to young people, especially. According to The Conversation, surveys of K through 12 educators found that 28% of teachers are witnessing a notable surge in students making derogatory remarks toward minority groups. There have been spikes in racially motivated bullying. That is just among children. And then, of course, we see how people, adults, feel so emboldened because of Trump saying horrific things like we saw at the UFC fight over the weekend. How do you think we heal from this and move forward so kids know that this is not okay and adults know that this is not okay?
Well, one of the things, I mean, I think Juneteenth is important for several reasons. There's a big effort to erase Black history, Black people who are considered other from America. I always have difficulty with the concept of Black history because I think Black history is really American history. The way the English took the land from the Native Americans and worked the lands with African Americans and constructed a culture around Protestantism, that's America. That's not Black history. That's not Chinese American history. That's American history, full stop. And there's terrible parts of it that we need to face up to, but there are also really incredible aspirations that we should own. We're a big country. We're a complicated country. We should tell our complicated stories. And what's happening, of course, is that we have the White House saying, not just saying if you talk about DEI, we're taking billions of dollars away from you. If you teach gender studies, you're not going to get any more federal money. If you talk about environmental equity, we're going to define you. So they're intimidating people. And what's happening is not simply that they have this very vitriolic, negative, anti-human meme that they're pushing, they're silencing other people. And so what's different in part in this time is that many of the people who would have stood up, whether it was law firms, whether it was university professors, whether it was corporate America, it wouldn't just be people, quote unquote, from the community. It'd be the community as well. But he's attacking the infrastructure of our democracy. And part of that, a people without a history becomes a people without a future. I mean, the idea that right now, in the Supreme Court, we have just nine justices trying to decide if birthright citizenship is constitutional. That was cornerstone of the 14th Amendment. That was the cornerstone of the Civil War, of Civil War amendments. It was trying to fix hundreds of years of negativity. It was actually trying to constitutionalize, if you will, the fight over the Civil War. And Trump comes forward, which every scholarly person looked at it said, that's ridiculous, not going to go anywhere. And it may still fail, I hope it does. But the fact that it's there, the fact that he's saying, I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I don't care what the Constitution says. We should not have these people be part of our, we should not, they should not be part of the we. So the Juneteenth is basically saying the country is a complicated country. It's a big country. We have July 4th, but we also have Juneteenth. It's not enough to have a holiday celebrating freedom for white people while black people are enslaved, while Native Americans are being put on reservations, while women are being denied the right to vote. Again, all these things are important in terms of moving forward. And part of the thing you talked about, young people feel dispossessed. They feel like they don't belong. They feel like they don't have a real future. And what Trump does is he promises them something that he has no intention of delivering. And then he also says, if things are not right, it's because of the other. It's because of the Mexicans. It's because of the Haitians. It's because of whatever. And the president, in almost any situation, but certainly in this situation, has tremendous rhetorical power and other power, kind of power too. But the idea of telling stories, of saying things, and he's not confined by the truth or facts. And what's missing, Rose, is that we don't have a real counter story that people are telling. Because everyone, not everyone, but too many people who we think of having power are cowering. They're sort of just waiting, trying to keep their head down. And I would just say we should look at Germany in the 1930s to see what's wrong with that strategy.
Professor Powell, what are you hearing from the young people you work with and the students? Because what is so incredible is seeing so many young people push back against this administration, against what they're doing to whitewash history. But when you think about that, that is a lot to put on young people. These are
Yeah, it
people who
is.
are possibly going to school, trying to find jobs, make ends meet, and then push against all of this. So, what are you hearing from the young people you work with and your students?
I think people are tired. The apparatus of the government is, and again, this is different than what's going on in Northern Ireland. They have struggles, but they don't have the government leading the attack on immigrants. The government are sort of ambivalent, but they're not leading it. And so people are worried. People are scared. Young people, as you know, the young people are having fewer babies, delaying getting married, and literally worried that the world that's unfolding will not support a future for them. There's no space for them to belong. And that's across the board, but especially true on young people, and especially true for young men. If you look at the data in terms of who's going to college, and now we're sending all of the tax on college and that education is unimportant, college remains important. And the majority of students in college now are women. And it's in elite colleges that gap becomes even wider. So the young men, frankly, including young white men, are feeling dispossessed, feeling lost. And then you have Trump and Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon and Elon Musk all sort of fanning the flame, telling them a story about why they should resent. I remember giving a talk in Indiana, and people were fighting about affirmative action. Indiana has a big school, and there were maybe five blacks and 10 Latinos in the affirmative action plan out of thousands of students. And I'm saying, there's a factory down the street closing, and no one raises a peep. And because 15 black and Latinos end up at your school, you feel like the sky is falling, and something's wrong with that. And I'm not saying people don't have concerns and we shouldn't listen to them, but it's so easy to turn blame it on the other. So, I think there's an article recently in the saying that even in Silicon Valley, the newly minted millionaires and even billionaires is also feeling dispossessed. So we have a country that's sort of tearing at itself. We're not united right now, but it has a particularly negative effect on the young people. And then you throw in AI, and it's like
Right.
when people are saying, you're not going to have a job. Whatever you're studying for, AI is going to take away from you. What are you supposed to do with that?
I'm glad you brought up colleges because I was just thinking, wow, what has happened since the Supreme Court conservatives struck down affirmative action? And according to Hechinger report, there's been an 18% aggregate drop in Black first-year enrollment across highly selective colleges.
Well, I served in the Philly sometime at Berkeley. Just so few Black students there. And it's interesting. It's like that Indiana example. It's like all this attention. The Trump administration, if you haven't done so, you should read the affirmative action case that came out of the Supreme Court. One of the things that's very disturbing in the case is just the disdain, particularly certain justices, including Thomas, have for Black people. It's like they don't belong there. They're stealing stuff from other students. I mean, it's just incredible. It's like we don't have a history and we don't belong. We don't deserve. And anything we got, we stole. I mean, that's the message. And so when the Secretary of Defense comes in, one of the things he did, he summarily fired generals and colonels, women and men who served the country for 20 and 30 years. He just fired them. And again, recently the military issued this list of official religions. They reduced the list from something like 230 to 35. They're saying to people, your religion doesn't count. The aggression, the meanness, the disregard, it's just off the chart. Mm-hmm. Now, good thing is, young people are pushing back. Just think about what happened in Minnesota.
Right.
And that was amazing. And no one really saw it coming, except people in Minnesota. And we do some work there with the McKnight Foundation. So we had a sense of it. But people coming together and standing up, in this case, in -5, 10 degree weather to ice, was incredible. And so when people do come together, this notion that Trump has all the power, as he would say, all the cards, is just a lie. I mean, regardless to what you think about the war in Iran, again, it showed that, and I'm not supporting Iran, but when they stood up to the United States, it wasn't a cakewalk. So part of the thing is for people to stand up. And unfortunately, there will be some costs. But whether it's Europe, whether it's law firms, whether it's students, whether it's governors and mayors of cities, whether it's corporations, say, no, we're not going to allow this. And not to frame it in terms of liberal versus conservatives. This is what America is when we're at our best. We care for each other. We look out for each other. And we never get it perfect. You know, so we have stuff like due process that never quite works as it should, but it's still an important beacon. And as we think about Juneteenth, it's not the past. And so even when we say Black people became free, not really. I mean, we know the history. There's the Black codes even before the ink had dry. Of course, Lincoln got killed and a Southerner, a racist, became president and immediately started chipping away at any rights Blacks might have had. Mm-hmm. And so we've had that push-pull history that's exhausting. You know, you mentioned that I've been doing this a long time. So you fight a battle, you think you've made progress, and then 10 years later, you're fighting it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor Powell, you're so inspiring. I hope you don't mind. I looked up your age. And sadly, my father actually passed 5 years before the age that you are now. So you're so inspiring to continue doing this work. But I have to imagine you're probably also pretty tired, right?
I am tired. I mean, I just flew back from Chicago back to Berlin. So I have that kind of jet lag. But yeah, I'm tired. But this work is amazing work. Mm. I mean, part of the work I feel like people do, I do, others, the Institute does, is really because we care.
Right.
And I would even say more than care. So it's hard to watch the earth and people you care about being hurt.
Yeah.
But it's also wonderful to have the capacity to maybe try to make a difference.
Exactly. And that is why we love having you on the show. And most of the guests that we have on are doing such good work, and it's so inspiring. It's almost head spinning because you read these stories about these people in Alabama who were so happy. Finally, they were going to get septic tanks after a decades of fighting, and then boom, gone. So it's just head spinning. We're going to take a quick break. On today's Your Call, we are marking Juneteenth. We're talking about the ongoing fight for basic civil rights and the fight against Trump's racism. Professor John Powell is a renowned scholar, director of the Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley, where he's also professor of law, ethnic studies, and African American studies. He's joining us from Berlin, where he's a fellow at the Robert Bosch Academy. And coming up after a break, we'll continue speaking with Professor Powell, along with Ryan Royster, co-founder of Hella Juneteenth in Oakland, and Gerald Baptiste, event producer for the Juneteenth Festival in Berkeley. And if you'd like to join us to talk about where we are right now, what's on your mind as we mark Juneteenth tomorrow, and what we are seeing from the Trump regime, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We have a comment from John who says, "My comment is from the Greek philosopher Heraclitus, who said, 'No one is free until all are free, and slavery is an abomination.'" Thank you so much for that comment, John. You can email your call at kalw.org or give us a call, 866-798-8255. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are marking Juneteenth, which is officially tomorrow, and we're talking about the ongoing fight for basic civil rights and the fight against Trump's racism. We're joined by Professor John Powell, director of the Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley, where he's professor of law, ethnic studies, and African American studies. He's author and co-author of a number of books, including Belonging Without Othering: How We Save Ourselves and the World. Professor Powell joins us from Berlin, where he's a fellow at the Robert Bosch Academy. We'd also like to welcome Ryan Royster to the show, co-founder of Hella Juneteenth, a festival born from the grassroots Hella Juneteenth campaign launched in 2020, which mobilized more than 800 companies to recognize Juneteenth as a paid employee holiday, impacting more than 250,000 workers nationwide. Hella Juneteenth celebrations are tomorrow from 12 to 6 at the Prescott Market in West Oakland. You can find information at hellajuneteenth.com. Ryan Royster is an experiential creative director and producer whose work sits at the intersection of culture, community, and storytelling. Hi, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us.
For having me. Excited to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Gerald Baptiste, event producer for the 39th Juneteenth Festival in Berkeley. He's been involved with that festival since 1985. The theme for this year's festival is Color Me Free. They want to showcase all the colors of happiness, joy, and love to paint a bright and gleeful event where everyone feels welcome. The Berkeley Juneteenth Festival takes place on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the Lauren District between Ashby and Alcatraz. There will be an extended health fair for seniors and others to get health screenings and general health care, and a huge children's zone. You can find information at berkeleyjuneteenth.org. Hi, Gerald. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. So we've been talking with Professor Powell about this political moment. On the one hand, there's so much amazing work happening. So many people are coming together to fight Trump's racism. On the other hand, they're just going after so many crucial programs that disproportionately benefit Black people. As you both know, they're tearing down basic information about slavery in national parks and museums. So Ryan, let's start off with you. How are you sitting with this political moment?
Yeah, we're living in a moment where fundamental freedoms are being contested, from voting rights and reproductive rights, educational access, to very ability to tell our full history and our stories. And these are rights that previous generations have fought to secure and are being questioned, challenged, and in some cases rolled back. So I think it's particularly important right now to engage in the full spectrum of what freedom fighting looks like. And I think joy and celebration is also part of that.
I'm sorry, Ryan, we're having a hard time hearing you. Can you speak a bit closer to your microphone?
Yeah, sorry. Can you hear me now? Is that a little
Perfect.
better?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so I was saying we're living in a moment right now where fundamental freedoms are being contested, from voting rights and reproductive rights and educational access to the very ability to tell our full story as peoples. And these are rights that previous generations have fought to secure and are being questioned and challenged and in many cases rolled back. So I think it's precisely why celebrating freedom matters right now, and with Juneteenth approaching, and the celebration of Blackness out loud and in public has always been a radical political act in itself. So I think it's important for that full spectrum of freedom fighting, which includes our joy and our celebration as well.
Gerald, what would you like to add?
I think that's very well said. I definitely agree with the coming together part. And I know that for us at the Berkeley Juneteenth Festival, what we have is a variety of different people expressing themselves. There are authors there, there are storytellers, there are people, there are artists that actually do books, there are those that do their paintings, there are people that come together to support one another to show in a public display that, you know, we are here, we're united, we're strong, and that we're together. So it is a sharing for us of love. It's a sort of like a time capsule of our ancestors and legacy, where they all come together and then boof, in just a short period of time, in that location and space where we're all gathered, we can become one really powerful entity, you know, of again, unity, that it's not just a Blackness, it's a peopleness, it's a human race, it's all of us coming together for all of our civil liberties, for the disabled community, for the LGBTQ community, for the seniors, and for the children, for their education and the future. We can all get together and say that there are a lot of different people that are contributing to not just the cause for civil liberties and our rights and our freedoms, but also just for the existence and the furtherance of this planet as a whole, as people. So, you know, we're very, very happy to at least offer a venue for people to come and contribute.
And I love, Gerald, that at the Berkeley Juneteenth Festival, you're going to be having an extended health fair where seniors and others can get health screenings and general health care, health awareness information. Can you tell us more about that?
We have the majority of the major health care providers. We have Kaiser, we have Sutter Health, we have Alameda County. We have doctors and we have nurses that are coming together, African-American doctors, African-American nurses that have booths, tents, and they have vans that they're going to be able to do screenings and testing for sickle cell, for cancer, for blood testing and phlebotomy, all the different things that people can come to at least test themselves and find out what their health care are. We don't have any of the cognitive tests, you know, but we do have some of the physical tests. So, you know, we're just trying to provide again, you know, to make sure that we're ensuring that there is a future, that for our young kids, that they have education, they have educational resources, schools, they have teachers, and for the elder and for the middle age and people going forward, that they can at least monitor their health care there if they're not going to a doctor regularly. So we're providing, again, a plethora of different health care providers that have all joined us in this call. They will be present there. So you can come out and get screened and tested for any of your ailments that you may be concerned about.
I love this. This is the Berkeley Juneteenth Festival, Sunday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the Loran District between Ashby and Alcatraz. They're going to have a number of vendors, a lot of activities, music, and then the extended health fair. Ryan, can you tell us more about Hella Juneteenth in West Oakland? What can people expect at this celebration?
Yeah, I think it's exciting to be celebrating Juneteenth in one of Oakland's most historic Black neighborhoods. And it's been our goal this year to expand from just one day of celebration to this more of a week-long cultural build that establishes Oakland as the Bay Area's Juneteenth epicenter, with its history of activism and specifically Black activism. I think it's a beautiful hub to kind of unite people to celebrate in West Oakland specifically. But tomorrow, this is the fourth annual Hella Juneteenth Festival. We're always excited to celebrate with a multi-generation audience. It is a truly a family-friendly multi-generation celebration.
Oh, we're losing you again, Ryan.
Sorry, let me try to can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead. Thank you.
So our hope is to have a multi-generational celebration of freedom that involves food and music and fun and Black-owned food vendors and fun for the entire family. Also, brands that are allies coming out to set up activations as well. So it's really a showcase of Black expression, Black creativity that spans across generations. So that we can celebrate together in this moment.
Mm. Professor Pell, what are your thoughts about these celebrations and bringing community together? I think what a lot of people struggle with right now is that there are these incredible things happening and across our communities. And then at the same time, when you're looking at, you know, this administration really taking a hammer to basic programs, it's hard to sit with both. I think a lot of people are trying to figure out how to do that. What are your thoughts?
That's a great question. And I always start by saying, don't sit, get up if you can. but I think we live the full spectrum of life, and we can't put life off for 10 years or 20 years waiting for something to happen. We have to engage in multiple levels. But part of that engagement is also just living fully with joy, with respect, with love is a very radical act. The heart of this authoritarian ethnic regime that Trump and Elon and Steve Miller are pushing is just saturated with hate, saturated with fear. And to reject that and say, not only am I going to reject it, I'm going to do something about it. That might include running for office, voting. It might include helping people eat. In Minnesota, it was taking people's children to school. So it could be a big thing or it could be a small thing, but do something to be engaged and be engaged with others. And part of that engagement could be the heavy stuff, being out in the snow, facing ice, but part of it also, as in Minnesota, they have brass solidarity. They have a band that plays at every event and people dance. They're doing the work, but they also are doing the joy. And so part of it is to hold on. And that's not new. That's not new.
Right.
You know, our parents and our grandparents had spirituals, songs that would just, you know, touch the soul, dance. They would, you know, give you that deep embodied experience and connection with others. And connection with the earth. So remembering all of that, even as we do the hard work, and just as I have to give a shout out, we're having a conference in October 9th and 10th in Louisville, the Othering and Belonging Institute. It'll be a 2.5-day conference. We're expecting well over 1,000 people, and we hope that some people will come out. We normally have the conference here in the Bay Area. This year we're going to have it in the South, so we hope that those of you in the Bay Area can still come.
And you can find information about the Othering and Belonging Conference in Louisville, October 9th and 10th at belonging.berkeley.edu. Professor John Pell is director of the Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley. He's professor of law, ethnic studies, and African American studies. We're also joined by Ryan Royster, co-founder of Hella Juneteenth in West Oakland. It'll be taking place tomorrow from noon to 6 at the Prescott Market in West Oakland. Find more information at hellajuneteenth.com. Gerald Baptiste is event producer for the 39th Juneteenth Festival in Berkeley, and that'll take place Sunday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the Lauren District between Ashby and Alcatraz. They're going to be having a health fair there. Seniors and others can get health screenings and general health care. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We have an email from a listener who wanted to bring up the fact that the unemployment rate is increasing under Trump, and it is disproportionately affecting Black women. And we've been wanting to do a show about this, actually, because after so many federal employees were fired or laid off or left, there was a really important piece in the New York Times about how, you're right, it was so many Black women lost their jobs, especially at the Department of Education. So thank you for that, and we'll definitely do a show about that. Another listener, and you were just highlighting this and addressing this, Professor Powell, another listener wants to know, what is the most effective form of activism at a time when people are just overcome with what is happening right now? So you addressed that, Professor Powell. Ryan, what would you like to add? What do you think is most effective given where we are right now?
I'd like to echo what Professor Powell said. I think action is essential. I think we have to activate ourselves in all of the ways. And I think sometimes we see direct action as this daunting thing, and we watch, looking back at history, when elders and ancestors were being attacked by water hoses and dogs and things, and we don't see our way into those types of moments. But with the access that we have, we just have to get up and speak up in the ways that we can. In 2020, my group, Hella Creative, we used our voices to effectuate change within the workplaces that we were in, and starting a campaign have these companies acknowledge Juneteenth as a paid employee holiday. And that was just a first step for us, and to kind of try to move the needle. And that ended up going viral, and 805 companies signed the pledge, and 250,000 employees were impacted. And with all of the collective momentum and movement that was happening, Black Lives Matter, and all of the people that were fighting and pulling in that same direction, we just did a small thing, but nothing's too small because there's so much collective action and activity happening around us. So I think one of the biggest things is to not be intimidated and discouraged that you may not be able to effectuate massive change, or you don't see those opportunities, but just do something and it will add up.
Gerald, what would you like to add?
I agree with both of the gentlemen that spoke prior to me, and that is that I agree with the professor in the sense that we need basically a platform or a place that we gather people that they can come and they can sing, they can dance, they can show some type of movement. You know, movement is not always progress, but movement is an effective way to express oneself. So what we do at the Berkeley Juneteenth as well, and I'm sure it's happening at all of the Juneteenths, is that we gather people together, we have a very expressive, unified movement together, and we have speakers. So first we engage people to let them basically support one another and to be unified in that motion. And then we have a platform so that different political speakers that we're having that will come to the Berkeley Unified Tea Festival and speak, to express themselves and to share. And it's something that we like to call edutainment. So while the people are engaged in their own self-expression, they're receiving the information and the doctrines from the speaker that are also educating them to what they're doing to make some changes, how the crowd themselves can support the elected officials to move some of the agendas and some of the things that we want forward. We do this in a brand new way, because nowadays we don't need a mass protests and marches. We can just gather together and then just all agree that we can go to the polls and we can do other things to help support the cause to move this forward. Because right now we're under serious attack, and the attack that we have, when you have your program about the women who are losing their jobs, I would definitely like to be a part of that, at least to listen, because it's, to me, what basically President Trump, that's one of his biggest vitriols that he has against African-American, particularly women. So it's no mistake that they're being targeted. And that's one of the things that we have at the festival. We have a women's collective that will be there sharing information about what they're doing and how women and men can support one another to get involved with some type of movement to at least address that issue.
Oh, gosh. And Gerald, I just looked up the number. According to an analysis by gender economist Katisa Roy, Black women lost 319,000 jobs across public and private sectors just under the first 5 months of the Trump administration. I forgot that the number was so high, 319,000 jobs.
No mistake. That's not an accident. It's purpose. So we talk about some of the hidden things Trump administration is doing, the assault that he's making upon our community. We look at our basic needs, right? The housing, you see a lot of more displaced homeless. I'm sure that number's going to rise. The unemployment, they're not even sharing with the American public the way they once did on a monthly basis in terms of the jobs gained and our loss. And then we know that the food prices are going up. So there's a different way that this administration is attacking people of color to increase the divide between those that have and those that do not have to pretty much rid out. And then, you know, they'll start with other tactics in terms of immigration or gelling, jailing, and taking into incarceration some of our males. So first is the women with the unemployment, then next you'll see another movement that this administration is going to make toward incarcerating more African American men.
Well, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. I would love to have all of you back. We're going to just continue to have these conversations, and I hope that you can take part in one of the thousands of events happening across the country. Thousands and thousands of Juneteenth events are happening. In fact, I bet in your area, you could probably go to an event tomorrow and over the weekend. If you're even in the Bay Area, we are very lucky to be surrounded by a number of Juneteenth events. Gerald Baptiste is event producer for the Juneteenth Festival in Berkeley. It takes place Sunday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the Loren District. And again, there will be an extended health fair there. Ryan Royster is co-founder of Hella Juneteenth. It takes place tomorrow from noon to 6 p.m. at the Prescott Market in West Oakland. And Professor John Powell is director of the Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley. Professor Powell, Ryan, and Gerald, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.